Eye on Careers in association with Laymoon.com. Refresh your career with jobs, courses, and events.
Welcome to Eye on Careers. It's the Valentine's Day special. For all those lovers out there,
I could stay awake just to hear you breathing. Watch you smile while you are sleeping, while you're far away dreaming. I could spend my life.
To all those couples out there who found love and happiness, we're sorry to hear the Care Bear is sick this evening, but this is Eye on Careers, and I have to ask you, do you love what you do? Do you love your job? And we are going to be looking tonight at those people who love their jobs, who love their careers. And one of those places you can find people who are doing what they love are in the SME space. People who actually go out and quit their jobs and start a business. And here with me is a gentleman who has been studying the SME space, working directly with the DED. No, his name is Rami Rabia. Rami, welcome to Eye on Careers here.
Great to be here, Shane. How are you?
Well, happy Valentine's Day, Rami.
Same to you. I feel the love.
And is there someone special in your life out there, Rami?
I thought I was on here for careers.
It is. Okay, careers. Yes, what you love. So you have been studying these SMEs. You have actually been driving around and visiting all of these businesses. What's the organization that you work for? We don't want to talk about. You did a study. You have a list of the 100 SMEs, correct?
Yes, in fact, as you know, Shane, Dubai is a bubbling place for SMEs and entrepreneurs. And at the center of that is an agency called the Dubai SME, which is under the Department of Economic Development. And they're an SME promotion board. They've recently released the state of the SME in Dubai.
And so this is actually another great structure that His Highness Sheikh Mohammed has helped create to encourage entrepreneurship, to encourage businesses. I heard a quote from His Highness. He said, you know, we're in the business of creating businesses.
Right.
And this really is probably one of the areas in the world that just attracts entrepreneurs from all over the place.
I mean, we keep benchmarking ourselves against Singapore, who do an incredible job at SME development. And in fact, this report actually does even look at how SMEs are doing in Singapore compared to what they're doing here in Dubai. So I have a few interesting statistics from this report that I'd like to share with you.
How much do entrepreneurs love their SME? Do you have that metric? Is there a love metric?
Unfortunately, there isn't.
You know, next year, you should add that in. The love metric.
Well, we need to love them because 95% of businesses here are SMEs.
You know, they actually did a study. I can't remember who did it on top performers metric. That's who's the highest earning, and they compared it with happiness, and they realized that many of the top earning professionals are miserable. Just because you're good at making that much, you can actually be absolutely miserable. So money's not the metric. For happiness here, but sorry, please give us some real stats here.
So yes, it's a tough.
I'm
life.
Intoxicated by the Valentine's Day special here.
I hear you. So this report looked at the productivity or the value add per employee for SMEs versus large companies. So for SMEs, it's about 149, almost 150,000 dirhams compared to large companies, which is 165,000 dirhams.
So people are more productive in large companies?
It appears that way.
That's not a very pro-SME stat, Rami.
Then they compared it to what how other SMEs doing in other countries. And, of course, to do that, you have to readjust that figure to purchase power parity. In that case, the productivity would be about 112,000. And compared to South Korea...
So you took us down. You just knocked off and you just made our even more less productive.
Well, you need a benchmark,
just like that.
So...
This is not going well. Okay, well, what happens next in this study? Is there some light at the end of this tunnel, or...?
Well, if you compare us to South Korea, their productivity is about 215,000 dirhams. And if you compare us with Singapore, it looks even a little more scary. It's about almost 400,000 dirhams productivity per employee. However, if you compare us with New Zealand, we're actually ahead. They're only about 94,000 dirhams.
We're ahead of the... Their productivity went down ever since Lord of the Rings stopped filming there. So the SMEs, but is it really, you know, when you meet these people, are they more engaged? Are they happier? Or are they just more stressed out because they're wearing 17 hats? They have no stability. They don't know where their cash flows are coming in. So is that also not, it's not very positive, is it?
Well, I think you hit it. I mean, this report looks at many factors. But as an entrepreneur, really, you wear many hats. You're the HR director, you're the head of finance, you're the head of strategy, you're usually the head salesperson. So, you're trying to do it all. This report also looked at the human capital development orientation of companies. And did you know that only 25% of SMEs indicated having a dedicated HR person in the company?
No, that makes sense. So because if the company's less than 20 people... You know, you end up, you know, it's not until I think you break over 100 staff that you really feel the pinch of not having the HR manager there.
Okay, so we have about 72% of SMEs have some kind of evaluation and rewards performance structure in place. However, only 24% of these SMEs have a regular key performance indicator-based performance evaluation approach.
I don't know what you just said. I have no idea what that meant.
Well, in other words...
That's confusing.
In other words, appraisals and performance evaluations are not done based on KPIs. Only about 25% of them are done based on KPIs.
So you basically are just subjectively like, hey, great job.
That's what it looks like.
You want a vacation to Hawaii.
Well, I wish it was a vacation to Hawaii, but...
Yeah. So, what, you know, after everything, you know, you've spent a lot of time in this space. And I think, in fact, we have the SME number one coming on the show later this episode. Fadi Malaise, the chief executive officer of Just Falafel, was one of your SME, he's the number one on the SME 100 list. Is that correct?
That's right.
I seem to be stumbling slightly this evening. He is number one on the SME 100, correct? I'm not 100% sure. I haven't confirmed that.
The second edition of the SME 100 was introduced a little earlier this month. And yes, he ranked number one SME in Dubai.
Look at those falafels go. He's all over the place, huh? He'll be on later talking about it. We can check some of these stats against him. So I don't know if you'll still be around.
Well, those are some hot falafels, I have to say.
And you said corporate governance is an issue.
Yes,
with these companies.
A lot of people think, okay, why do SMEs even need corporate governance in the first place?
I was one of those people, just to say.
Well, it's things as simple as having audited statements. Only about 50% of SMEs have audited statements. The rest of the time, you ask an entrepreneur, hey, how's your cash flow? And he'll just reach into his pocket and say, yeah, pretty good.
That's true. I mean, I think you get audited statements going when you want to attract investors. right? And you want to have a benchmark of this is what our financial performance has been. This is what our intrinsic value is. So would that correlate onto, you know, those 50% that are actually getting it are the ones that are really aiming for big growth, and maybe the other 50% are more organic. I'm going to stay a mom and pop shop and I'm comfortable being that, doing that. Is it actually tied to the ambitions of the entrepreneur himself? In fact, are companies with good corporate governance more ambitious? This could be a thesis here we just uncovered.
We can ask, I think, Fatty about that. But I think even if you're not looking for investments, you just want to know where you are in your business. It's a competitive landscape out there, and you also have to kind of stay ahead. So having things such as audited statements, checks and balances in your business will make sure that you'll be sustainable and survive for the future.
So I just want you to know that we have our first lover this evening. We have our first lover on the Valentine show. His name is Michal Alferes from Janus Capital Group in the DIFC. He says, I love my job. It's lots of fun. We have no idea what he does, but he's at Janus Capital. Do you know, have you heard of that? No. So it was our first lover. If you love your job, SMS is at 4001. Sorry, I just totally cut you off, but it was Aerosmith, so it's okay. So are there any other breaking stats here on the SME 100? I mean, I think when you look at the corporate governance, is there more to it than that? I mean, if you're not looking to grow and get that investment capital, then there isn't really a point to having the corporate governance, is there?
Well, entrepreneur...
I mean, if you're 12 people, there's 12 people in the company.
Well, you don't know what you don't know, right? And as an entrepreneur, like I said, you put on many hats, and sometimes you're in your own little world. And if you had, for example, a board of directors to consult with or look to, then maybe you can expand your horizons and sort of make a 10-year learning journey become 3 years instead. So these are all within the corporate governance.
A single thought can expand your mind. And once your mind has been expanded, it never returns to its original size. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, that's a fact. So is that also that people put these boards together as part of their business development, risk infrastructure, or operational infrastructure?
Absolutely.
To build in a board of advisors.
That's right.
Do you advise building a board of advisors?
Well, I mean, you can have anything from mentors to a full-out paid board of advisors. And some SMEs within the SME 100 have actually gone to that extent of having a paid board of advisors.
So if we were to look at now Fatty Malaise is number one on the SME 100, does that now he should be the benchmark? So all of these things you're saying should be echoed in his approach.
I'd love to know exactly how he's done it.
So. You would love to know what goes into that falafel. Mm. I don't know if we'll get the secret recipe this evening, but we'll have to look at that. So will you be sticking around then, Rami?
Sure.
Yeah? Okay. Well, thank you so much. It's Rami Rabia from the, what's the exact name of the SME?
That's right.
The SME. That's it. Okay. Thank you. We'll be right back. Rami will be back with us a little later. But now we actually have our first guest, who is a man who has a passion for learning and training, a passion for finance, and he's a man who practices what he preaches. His name is Robert Hanna, and he's the regional director for Morgan International. Let's hear a little bit about his background.
This is Eye on Careers. Executive CV.
Robert Hanna is the regional director of Morgan International. He is a multicultural professional who for many years has had the fortune to be inspired by numerous business leaders and co-workers from different regions, businesses, and backgrounds. Robert holds a master's degree in financial management from the University of Nancy in France and passed the CFA Level 1 as well. He started his career in external auditing at Moore Stephens Lebanon before he moved to France and Luxembourg to pursue higher education in 2002. Robert joined Morgan International in 2007 as International Commercial Director, looking after the commercial aspect of the business internationally, and then moved to the UAE in 2012 as Regional Director, where he is currently spearheading the UAE, Bahrain, and Qatar markets. Robert has regularly represented Morgan International in various global conferences and events and has been an instrumental driving force within the Morgan management team. Having spent 7 years in the high...
Hello. Well, Robert, welcome to Ion Careers.
Thanks, Shane. Great to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you here, and thank you for taking the time to come out and share your stories. I know it's never easy to get on the radio and just tell us everything that happened in your life. Yeah. And again, on this Valentine's episode, you're away from the woman that you love.
Yes, absolutely. Actually, I also want to take this occasion to send her my regards, my love over the air.
Your regards? Come on, that's not, you have to do, don't you have a poem presented or anything like that?
Yeah,
or?
I don't want to get jealous actually during the show, so I'll leave it off.
Well, I have a poem I would like to dedicate for everyone out there on their Valentine's Day. And so this is, what's your wife's name? Are we allowed to say?
Hoda.
Hoda, so Hoda, this is dedicated to Hoda. Let there be spaces in your togetherness, and let the winds of the heavens dance between you. Love one another, but make not a bond of love. Let it rather be a moving sea between the shores of your soul. Fill each other's cup, but drink not from one cup. Give one another of your bread, but eat not from the same loaf. Sing and dance together, but be joyous, but let each one of you be alone. Even as the strings of a lute are alone, though they quiver with the same music. Give your hearts, but not into each other's keeping, for only the hand of life can contain your hearts, and stand together, yet not too near together. For the pillars of the temple stand apart, and the oak tree and the cypress grow not in each other's shadow. So I've given the poem to your wife now.
Thank you very much.
I saved you big time there. So
you did, but actually hearing
my
this
regards wasn't really going to cut it there. But yeah, all right, we got the poem out, so you're good.
Yeah, hearing this, I think you somehow spy on us.
Well, you know how it is now. Oh, somebody already nailed it. That did not take long at all. That was Khalil Gibran. So we'll figure out. Whoever just sent that in, if you could send your name, that would be good. So that was Khalil Gibran, and it was because you're actually Lebanese, right?
Right, yes.
And a lot of people think he was Lebanese, but actually Khalil Gibran's American.
So he's not. His name is Gibran, Gibran.
But his citizenship is American.
Yeah, he's Lebanese. He came back to Lebanon, actually.
Sorry, I think with my poem I went a little over time. We are going to be looking at the story of Robert Hanna, the regional director of Morgan International, in just a minute, so stay with us. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. We are here with Robert Hanna, regional director for Morgan International. Robert, welcome to Ion Careers. How are you?
Fine, thank you, Shane. How are you doing?
Very good, very good. For those of you just joining us, I was just reading Robert's wife, Huda, a Valentine's poem as we started this show. And of course, I nailed it because I was her favorite poet, correct?
Exactly.
I got her favorite poet just like that.
Yes.
That's amazing. Valentine's Day spirit is alive and well. But there seems to be some confusion because, you know, some people say that Khalil Gibran is American because his citizenship's American.
Yes. Well,
his citizenship is American.
When you live abroad for a couple of years, they give you citizenship, but they don't deprive you from your roots. So when he came back, I mean...
When he died, what was his citizenship?
Does he have a museum in America? He does, in Lebanon, actually.
He has a museum.
Yes.
So wherever your museum's from, then that's your citizenship? That's not a metric for citizenship.
It is, actually.
No, he's one of the greatest poets, and of course his roots are Lebanese, and for all the Lebanese lovers out there this evening, I'm sure they'll be quite proud. And we had a competition, and someone guessed it right away. And hopefully we can get them on later. So you are now the regional director for Morgan International. How big is Morgan International, just as a benchmark?
Yeah, Morgan International is actually a regional-based company. We started in 1995 in Beirut, but we spread all over. We moved in 1997 to UAE, and we moved to India and Egypt to Cairo as well. And currently we are stretched between Canada to India, and we have offices all over the region.
You have offices from India to Canada?
Yes, we have acquired a company in Europe last year, actually. and it's based out of France, and we have offices in Montreal and in Toronto.
So this is like your financial training just seems that's the crux of the business, right?
You it
do
is.
Financial yeah. training, yes. CFA, chartered accountancies, etc.
Yeah, CPA, CMA, CIA, HR as well, supply chain and facility management.
Okay. So then but it seems like there's this explosion of training in financial services. Is that because of the crisis? Are people still trying to figure out what happened and they figure that if they get a qualification, they could figure it out?
Well, it could be related to that matter, but also there are four major, actually we classified into four major causes. And one of them goes back to 2002 with the collapse of the two big companies in the States. And also in 2003, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act that put a lot of pressure on certified people, on people who are technically strong in order to avoid, or people who have ethical standards and have been tested already on ethics. So whenever they go to protect the public interest as CPAs, they are credible enough to say that we can audit the financial statement of companies. And that put a lot of pressure on certified people. Going back to the CFA, for example, the CFA Institute, they have their own standards and code of ethics that that put a lot of pressure on technical people to get certified eventually, because they do investments and they have to give the assurance to the investors that they are trading on the best of the interest of the investors, not to their own interest. So that put a lot of pressure on certifications.
And this is going to be just as a pedestrian prediction here, I would say this has to be a massive growth area, because you look in the emerging markets, if there's one place where you want to be delivering financial services training, it has to be, Middle East, Africa, these areas where it's hugely coming online now.
Yeah, absolutely. If you look to some certification program, only 5% of people who sit for exams actually are from the Middle East region. And I always ask the question, do you think this is opportunity or challenge? And actually, this is a huge opportunity for people, because only 5% out of the total people sitting for certain certification is from the Middle East, and there is a very big room for people to
so people
evolve.
Who are sitting the exams here in Dubai, only 5% of them are from the Middle East.
Yeah, for certain.
Where's the rest of them?
In Europe, in North America, in Pacific Asia, in Australia.
Oh, all okay, over. But that's because but that's because 80% of the people who live here are expats, isn't it? Like
yeah.
We're still working here, but we're not from here.
Yeah, but still expat compose a big,
it's not Africans, though.
There are many
Africa coming up.
Yes, but there
are
many.
How strong is the African story in this growth vision here? Is it playing into it, or?
It is in particular regions such as Nigeria and South Africa. There is big demand on certification out there as well. We receive tremendous opportunities out there.
Mm.
Yeah.
So how did this all start? Did you know you wanted to be in financial training, or is it something that you've always dabbled in, or what were the early days like in high school? What was the dream? Did you want to be an astronaut? Or?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. Actually, I knew always that I'm going to be in business, but I had no idea that I'm going to land in a job that to do trainings. And probably I will shed some lights on this aspect. It's more of a passion, actually. And that when I was in the university on the second year, I knew that I'm going to fly to France to pursue my higher education. And then I got there.
Where were you? This was when you were in Lebanon.
Yes, on the second year of when I was in the second year of university, I knew at that time that I'm going to go to France to do my master's degree in finance.
You have like two choices, right, from Lebanon. You go to France or you go to Montreal, Canada.
Yes, and the third route is probably to come to Dubai. Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
it's very traditional, and you know why? Because the French language is basically the second language in Lebanon, and it makes sense that you fly to a second language home country. So this is a very traditional.
Right.
Yeah. So.
So okay. So then you were going to France to do your master's.
Yes, and part of the master was to also find an internship for a couple of months. You cannot get your master if you don't do it. And I got, since Before going to France, I also worked during the university and as external auditor, junior external auditor for a company called Moore Stephens. The reason I worked during the university in the morning, I just wanted to have an advantage, a competitive advantage, that when I graduate from as a BA, I would have an upper hand versus those who did not work during the last year of graduation. And I actually think this is a big step towards, for those who are in the school, you can always do that, because it's very important to have, always think what kind of competitive advantage, what differentiation I have all the time. And starting from school, starting from university, this is very important. And actually this landed me a job in the Luxembourg Stock Exchange, because I had the audit background and they were looking for somebody who has certain audit background, whether external or internal. And I applied and they just called me for a meeting and I got an internship there. And then I came back to Lebanon, and all of a sudden I received a call from my very good friend and a former colleague asking me to join a company he worked for. They were looking for a young person and whom they know. And at the beginning I rejected it, and I decided to move from finance, from audit, to business development function.
This was Stargate?
Sarbier Active, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So you were going to be an auditor otherwise?
Yeah, my plan when I moved back from France was to find a job in the financial area in one of the big four.
As an auditor?
No, I started. Yeah, I know.
Was that? It doesn't seem like, you know, do you like audit?
I used to, not anymore. Yeah, you know, when you get exposed to many things, you at the end of the day, you try to pick the best. And in the beginning, I was only exposed to audit, which is a great function at the end of the day, but it doesn't suit me anymore.
What happens mostly in audit is people join, they do their 4 years. As soon as they're qualified, they quit.
Yeah. Yes.
So I'm not saying whether it's good or bad, but I mean, that's an interesting, you know, I think like 70% plus of the people who start to do their chartered accountancy, as soon as they become qualified in the audit, then they move on.
Yeah, because the audit gives you a lot of exposure in the beginning to various companies, a lot of fields and industries. And that gives you a lot of knowledge in a very short period of time.
But you wanted to jump into business.
Actually, as I said, a friend of mine called me and said, come and check the opportunity. And then I went there and I just said yes right on the spot. Because
so serendipity was at play.
It is not in the same, it's choice actually, because when I saw the opportunity, it was regional based. It has a lot of, I would say, interaction with many continents, including Africa and the region here. So it was of more, the thing that pushed me more was the international exposure, and I liked it. And I said, I'm going to give it a shot. I was only 22 years old, and I said, why not? Let me try it. If I like it, I go for it. If I don't like it, I carry on again. There is nothing to miss out there. And I liked it. So.
And we have here Mr. Anonymous, who says, I'm a liver too. I love my job. And I think he meant lover too, but he put liver. there we have, I love my job, Daniel Murphy from Carmichael Fisher, one of the local search firms out there that do great work. A big Valentine's Day hug to Carmichael Fisher and everyone else out there. We're listening to the story of Robert Hanna and his rise to one of the top jobs in Morgan International, as well as the interesting trend of the growth of financial training across the emerging markets. So we're going to be looking at lessons learned on the road to the top and exactly what's happening in our own backyard here. So stay with us. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and this is a Valentine's Day edition of Eye on Careers. We have Robert Hanna here. Robert, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thanks, Shane.
For those of you who missed it, we read a beautiful poem to Robert's wife. Of course, I picked one of her favorite poets, being the Valentine that I am. And that was Khalil Gibran. So we have a few lucky winners out there.
The Lebanese, Khalil Gibran.
Yeah, of course. Let us know. I love my job at MoneyGram, money transfer, somebody said. here is an auditor here, because I guess Robert had started his career in the audit function. And here he says, I'm an auditor for 8 years. I'm one of the youngest audit managers at 25. I love my job. And I believe I'm doing my bit to keep people's interest in check. Sad. All right. Valentine's love out to Sad and all the auditors out there. Here's someone who says, I just left work. I've been there since 8 a.m. Oh, my God. So, yes, I sure as hell love my job. Maybe a little bit too much. I have no idea who that person is. That's a long day. That's like 13 and a half hour day. So, Robert, how are you feeling now on Valentine's Day? Are you feeling the love?
I feel love in the air. Yeah.
So you got out of audit. Of course, we have, as you can see here on the SMS, there's lots of auditors who love their job. But then you got into Stargate Cyberactive, which basically sells data to the aviation industry.
Yeah, software actually to book, to do the reservation of the airlines. So it's a global distribution system actually.
Ah, okay.
Yes, and the original office was in Beirut, but we had offices in Africa and in the region here in UAE and Saudi Arabia. And I was in charge of the Nigerian market. The beginning, I was sent there to do kind of SWOT analysis with some colleagues. The assignment was for two weeks, and it was the first time where I landed in Africa. And Africa, by the way, is completely different than any other place on Earth. If not been to Africa, you have to. So it's different. And when I came back, with my colleagues with SWOT analysis, and we delivered it to the management, and we thought that's it. We stopped there. After 2 months, the CEO calls me to his office and say, I have an assignment to you. I said, what's it? I said, I'm going to move you to Nigeria for 4 months.
And you were stationed, where are you working out of?
At this Lebanon.
You're in Lebanon. Right?
Yeah, I used to go in and out to UAE and to Africa, and then he asked me to go to...
But this is not on the usual migration routes. This was not Montreal. This was not Paris.
And you know, I assure you, you got a cultural shock when you fly it from Paris or from Luxembourg to Africa. That's why it's different.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
We imagine.
Beside the business acumen, there one thing I learned is to really appreciate everything I got in life. When you go there, when you land for the first time in the airport in Lagos. Anyway, when he sent me back, in his office, he told me, "Look, I'm sending you to this assignment because I trust you, I believe in you, and I want you to go there. But also, I want you to go and come back, and you just need to show me that you." In fact, you made me take the right decision. I trusted you. You need to pay me back this trust. And now it's your turn to show me what you were made of. And in fact, I left with three things to Nigeria, with my luggage, obviously, and with the fact that he trusted me, and with the fact that I now have to show him what I was made of. And that was, for me, an opportunity. I either had to turn it down and stay where I am, or either have to take it on and show him what I'm made of. And... I was able to show him what I was made of, and I was really happy out of the result. He was happy as well. And
one of my mentors always said to me, he said, you know, as men, we're victims of our ego. And so it sounds like he manipulated your ego there. Are you man enough to take on Nigeria?
You're not telling me, are you man enough to go to Paris? You've got to be man enough to go to Nigeria.
How come they never say that, huh? Yeah. I don't think you're man enough to take on the business in Hawaii. The Waikiki office. Show us what you are made of.
Yeah, exactly.
It gets into Nigeria. But it's interesting because on one hand, it's like this land of opportunity that they continue to talk about and one of the possible major growth thrusters for the Middle Eastern economies. On the other hand, it's a very challenging environment, full of its own nuances and idiosyncratic stone walls, which for some people make it slightly unsavory. For others, I have many entrepreneurs who are extremely excited about Nigeria, who are really excited about the African story. And in fact, they say, you know, it's one of the only places where you can get huge exits. You know, for the private equity firms are saying, you know, you're looking at $1 billion exits. I think they're talking about doing this train system across Africa. Again, that's huge infrastructure projects with huge opportunity, huge upside. What's your take on it? Is the African story more hype and sizzle than steak, or is it all steak?
No, I think with the African market, and especially Nigeria, there are tremendous opportunities out there. You've got around 150 million people living in Africa, in Nigeria, exactly. And Nigeria is well known that they are one of the largest producers of oil in the world. That's a great combination. Now, the challenge is the disparity in the purchasing power at in the people itself. And you might see 150 million, but the majority of them, they live in the line of poverty. One interesting fact, actually, we used to joke and we used to look at each other, like, say, what kind of project, what idea we can do that if we can get $1 only as profit from each person in Africa, in Nigeria, we can make $150 million a year. And that's a fact, actually, because it's 150 million people living there in a very, there are a couple of cities.
In Africa?
Nigeria.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about Nigeria, Mark.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, there are tremendous opportunity, but the challenges is way also big, as I told you, in terms of parity of purchasing power.
And I believe one of your staff members threatened to kill you.
Yeah, the driver.
Are we allowed to talk about that on the radio? Or is not supposed to mention that?
Yeah, the driver. The driver. He used to leave me for three times.
Not like, wait, someone. The driver. Yes. Yeah. This is like starting right at the base level. You know, you haven't even gotten to work yet.
I mean, because the driver he used to be. By the way, you've got to pick your driver very carefully there.
Apparently, you do.
He was a boxer. So.
Wow.
So he told me, I'm not going to let this sun shine on you. And I mean, I was alone, so.
Yeah, well, at least he was offering a free burial. I mean, that's quite generous by African standards. I mean, you know, if the sun's not going to shine you, I would assume then that he's burying you right after.
Yes.
Which is nice.
Yeah,
I mean, it's quite considerate. It was quite considerate.
Get assured that he got fired the second day.
After you hired bodyguards. The bodyguards are here. Somebody must be getting terminated. So okay, but I mean, you know what? That could happen anywhere, though. You know, I think, you know, I was speaking with someone from the United States of America, and they said, and they had worked in Africa, and they had almost been killed, like, I don't know how many times, right? And the first five times that they had almost been killed was in America, right? They hadn't even gotten to Africa yet, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes you can just say, the driver in Nigeria, but, you know, how many drivers in the U.S. have killed people, you know? You can get shot walking in Central Park, so...
Yes.
You know, by any stretch, you know, what's the actual risk level? It's hard to determine. I think that's the only thing. I think you kind of know what your risk level is in the U.S., that if you're in Manhattan at 4 o'clock, you're safe. If you're in Central Park at 3 a.m., you know, probably not so safe. Whereas in Nigeria, we're not really sure.
It is to a certain level. You don't have to drive in some areas during the night. You don't have to go to a certain area anytime during the day or the night. It's known, but sometimes you get faced with the fact that you are alone in such a country, and yeah, the mentality there is aggressive to a certain level with some people.
But it was a success for you. I mean, the business was there. You yielded returns. Nothing more than a little bit of a banter between someone who, you know, got a bit aggressive with you, and that could happen in any city.
Yes.
It could happen anywhere. It doesn't have to be Nigeria. So obviously things are fairly safe because you came in, you came out, you did your business, but then you quit Stargate after that, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I did quit after 2 years from that for business reasons actually. And I wanted to get into a different kind of. I was young at that time. I wanted to explore different kind of opportunities as well. And I got the opportunity to work for Morgan, and I got passionate about the fact. People now ask me what you do. I don't say that I am original director for Morgan. I say I help people change their life. Actually, this is what we do. We convince them to get certified, and we know when they get certified, they get to the next level in everything in their life. Just as you mentioned before, life is not only about money. Life is about happiness. And happiness is about satisfaction. It's about how you fulfill yourself. So you don't have to look only at money. You have to look at all factors in your life. Do you do hobbies? Are you married? If you're married, you don't have to work 14 hours a day. You've got kids as well. They will grow without you. You have to look at life as a happiness. The priority is happiness. So this is what we push candidates to do. Get the technical skills done. Get your life, successful life at work, but also look at other aspects of life.
Sounds like love is in the air. And for those of you out there, you know, it sounds like Robert Hanna loves his job, loves changing people's lives. This is a story of Robert Hanna, how he made it to the top, a story that weaves through Europe, Lebanon, Africa, and ends up right here in the epicenter of Dubai. This is Ion Careers. We'll be right back, so stay with us. Hello and welcome back to Ion Careers, the Valentine's Day edition. Ahmed Reda loves three things in life: his wife, his job, and tennis. So, what do you love? How many people out there actually love their job? You know, I would say only 5% of people love their job. I think the other 95% just, you know, they won the lottery, the first thing they do is quit. That's what I think. That's what I think. Not me, though. I mean, I'm not talking about me. I mean, for most people. But we're here listening to the story of Robert Hanna, a man who truly does love his job. Robert Hanna, regional director of Morgan International. He says, I don't teach people about finance. I change lives. Robert, welcome back to Ion Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
That's such a powerful statement, you know, that, you know, I don't teach people financial stuff, I guess. That's not exactly what you said. But you said you change people's lives. And, you know, it's so funny because I talked to quite a few people in your field, and by coincidence, most of your competitors. And there really is that feeling. In fact, Amanda Lyon, who won ICAW Accountant of the Year, she really wants to make that contribution to the emerging markets. Like, what a difference it makes today, for example, that through the work that, you know, they do, that you can actually, you know, a local here, someone who's born and raised in the UAE can become an ICAW chartered accountant or other such qualification without having to go to London, without having to go overseas. And that's because of people like you who are putting that training infrastructure in place on the ground.
Exactly. This is what we aim for, is to contribute to the whole community, actually. As you do in this show, if you try to contribute a lot to people's life, and in other ways also in Morgan, we try as much as we can to advise people about what they do in their life. We consult with them as career advisor as well. It's not as people they just get into the class. If they don't fit into the CPA, we try to see if they fit in other areas, because we believe if they contribute to their life, they contribute to the whole community. And as a result, the whole community will benefit. The GDP will increase as a result, actually, because of productivity. So, yes, it has a lot of advantage. And this is why we exist. This is our bread and butter, actually.
I was always looking for a statistic to say, you know, is there a relationship between the number of professionally qualified people and the level of peace and security that country or nation or that city experiences? And I wasn't able to find anything on the net, but of course I didn't look that hard. I could probably take another look, but I'm sure there must be a direct correlation in terms of the more professionals, the more qualified professionals, the higher the education, the higher the qualifications of that populace, I'm sure the less, the safer and more stable and economically fruitful that economy must be.
To a certain extent, I would add to that probably is more on the regulations side. Obviously, setting standards in part of the certifications and apply them in the job market would definitely increase the compliance, decrease as well the fraud in many areas. So it's probably not directly related, correlated to the safety issues, but more to the regulation and the standards as well.
On every guest who comes on to Ion Careers has to, you know, withstand the battering of one question, which is, what is your secrets to success?
Ion Careers now reveals the secrets to success.
So, Robert, what is your secret to success?
Yeah, I would start that with a small quote. Just to say to everybody listening, there is one thing standing between you and your dreams, and it's only you. If you actually think about it carefully, when you decide about one thing, don't make it as a wish list. Do it as a commitment. All right? Don't look at it as I'm gonna do it, but I'm gonna leave it as aside. It's not a priority for me. Just check what you want in life. Put a goal, and then work accordingly. Plan. Put an action plan. Check what resources you have, and check if you can achieve it. Don't put exaggerated goals in your life into the sense like I'm gonna reach the moon, and you don't have the ability even to build a rocket. Just check what you can do and start from there. And I'm sure you can achieve a lot. Many people, by doing that, achieved a lot. And many people looking at it from the external side just kept their life looking. I'm sure when you want to, at the age of 60, 70, when you look, when I look back to what you achieved in your life, you want to be proud about it. Additional to that, I was reading something about the pain last time, and it was really, really interesting to see it in a very small kind of statement. There are two pain in life, two kind of pain. The pain of doing one thing and the pain of not doing it. The pain, which in another word is the pain of regret, because if you don't do something good to your life, you're going to regret it for your whole life. So pain is temporary, but gain is for the whole future. So I end up with that you have to have action. You have to make action in your life to achieve your goals. Don't stand and look at it only.
Eye on Careers.
In association with LeMoon.com. Jobs, courses, and all things career.
You know, I like how you said that, because I was reading a quote that says, the world does not reward thought. It rewards action. You know, you have to get out there, get on the field, kick the ball, you know, at least try to kick the ball at the goalpost if you're going to put some points on the board.
Exactly.
The interesting part, I think, and maybe because it's with the financial background and the planning and all that stuff that comes with it, is you're saying be semi-realistic in your goal. Don't aim for the moon. Whereas some people say aim for the moons, and if you miss, you will be among the stars.
Yeah, but what are you going to do there, die?
You know, it's funny because and I want to send a big thank you out to Ahmed Bin Sulaym, chairman of DMCC, who was our guest speaker at the Canadian University of Dubai on Tuesday night, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. He came out and had a chat with us. And I asked him that because he's building the world's tallest commercial tower called Burj 2020. You know, he's built the region's largest free zone. And he's just rumbling and stumbling his way to the top on every metric. I think today he now has 60% of the global re-export tea market. And if you look at where they were, you know, 5-8 years ago, they were nowhere. They weren't even on the map. So, you know, this guy's just pushing himself to the maximum, pushing his team, and he's just continually driving for, you know, moon after moon after moon, if you will. I said, Ahmed, isn't there a chance of having, you know, the Icarus paradox, you know, where Icarus had the wax wings and he flew too close to the sun and melted them? And he said, you know, that's the way I want to live my life. That's the way I want to go for gold. It's a bit more risque for some people, but, you know, it's really an exciting path. And then you also have the businessman who's built his business slowly, one brick at a time, over 40 years, and he rises up to become number one in his region, or maybe even if he's lucky, number one in the world.
But let's face it, those who rise it up to the top very quickly are exceptional. I'm talking here to the majority of the people who are not exceptional, but who want to be successful. Being exceptional, not in kind of performance, but in term of exceptional of the rule, like Facebook, like Apple, like Microsoft. These are exceptional. These are started from a garage. But let's face it, not everybody can do it, but they can be successful by taking steps that are achievable with time. They can grow their goals. Yeah, today your goal might not be able to achieve to get to the moon, because by far you will not get there. But at least make a statement that you're gonna do the first step to get out of the whole issue that you have, and then move up to the moon later on. So dreams should be gradual. in my opinion.
What's your final piece of advice for all the lovers out there today on the Valentine's episode?
Get crazy.
Get crazy. Oh, my God. You mean get crazy about your passion, about your dream?
Yes.
I think that's what you meant. Yes. Not we'd interpretate that any other way. But of course, that's what you were saying. Thank you so much, Robert Hanna, for coming out this evening. It was great. And unfortunately, we were just getting started and we have to move on. So hopefully we can have you on the show again sometime soon.
Thank you very much, Shane. Thank you for having me.
That was Robert Hanna, Regional Director of Morgan International. Morgan International provides financial training, CFAs, chartered accountancy, and as well as many other different trainings, project management and logistics, supply chain. I think this is one area that we are seeing some interesting growth in the region. Of course, for those of you who love your job, love your lovers and love everything else about life, we have here a man, Henry, says he loves his job, and he seems to be he's a fan of the show. So thank you so much, Henry, for your support. This is Eye on Careers, and coming up, we are talking to SME number one, Just Falafel. It's gonna taste good. Mr. Fatty Malas, Chief Executive Officer of Just Falafel, in just a minute.